Hey everyone, it's Lauren. By now, people across the country and the world know Breonna Taylor's name. Her name, her face, and her story of being a young EMT and aspiring nurse, who was remembered by her high school teachers for her brilliance in math and willingness to help other students learn, have been shared at protests, on social media, by celebrities, in magazines, and on the news. But in late September, a grand jury in Kentucky declined to indict three Louisville police officers for shooting and killing Breonna Taylor. After the Attorney General of Kentucky announced the non-indictment, Ashley Lambert, a graduate student studying communication at St. Louis University, or SLU, wanted to make sure that her fellow students knew that Breonna Taylor's life mattered, so she picked a significant monument on campus to make her mark in chalk.
I woke up just like emotional and just upset about the indictment the night before. So I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what to do. And I was really frustrated that there would be so many students on SLU's campus that wouldn't know what happened. So I was like, let me just do what I do best, which is educate folks. So I had went to the clock tower because historically that monument just has a lot of weight to it.
Back in 2014, after the police killings of Michael Brown Jr. in North St. Louis County and Von Derrick Myers Jr. in South St. Louis City, the St. Louis University Clock Tower became a site where St. Louis University students raised their IDs to allow community activists on campus as their guests for what would become Occupy SLU, 6 days of teach-ins, community conversation, and an occupation of the St. Louis University campus, resulting in the creation of 13 Clock Tower Accords after conversations between students, community activists, and representatives of St. Louis University. And 6 years later, in 2020, students like Ashley gathered at the Clock Tower again to make new demands to change culture and policies at their university.
I'm like, somebody give me a notebook. Like, I need a notebook and I need a pen because none of my pens work and I'm not prepared for this. So I somebody gave me a notebook, and so I get up and I'm just like, you know, this happened and we can sit here, we can chant all day, we can sit here, have a conversation, we can go home and be mad, but at the end of the day, what is that changing?
So in this bonus episode, we'll hear from three students who organized direct actions and a new list of demands to change culture and advance racial equity at St. Louis University. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here. At the beginning of September, the St. Louis University Clock Tower became the site of a teach-in by faculty and Jesuit scholastics about racism in various fields and on campus as part of the nationwide scholar strike.
I did participate in SLUs very informally, so I just spoke when asked to speak, but formally I participated in the National Communication Association's panel for the scholar strike, which was virtual.
So when Ashley heard that no police officers would be indicted for shooting and killing Breonna Taylor, she returned to the clock tower to make her voice heard.
Everybody walks past the clock tower. Like, you can't go anywhere without walking past the clock tower. So, and I wanted everybody to hear her story and know what happened.
She chalked messages such as, "Protect Black women, say her name, Breonna Taylor, and no officer was convicted for the murder of Breonna Taylor," but also turned the clock tower into a space for fellow students to process the recent events.
I had hit up a couple students like, hey, let's chill at the clock tower. I'm going to chalk it up and let's just listen to some music and just not care what folks think about us and just, you know, be us and chill, do some homework.
Vanessa Sarmiento, an undergraduate studying criminology and political science, was among the students who joined Ashley at the clock tower.
Vanessa had came and she sat with me, and we had our own like therapy session with us, like, and the students were coming up as we were sitting there talking to me, telling me that they appreciate me, expressing their pains and their joys and just how they were feeling all about that. So overall, the day was just like, you know, good.
They left post-its and markers behind, hoping that students would continue to express themselves and remember others who have been killed by police. The next morning, Vanessa got a text from a friend with a picture of the clock tower. Ashley's messages in chalk had been covered by new messages in permanent marker that said Trump 2020 and David Dorn, the name of a retired black St. Louis police captain who was shot and killed in June after responding to a burglary alarm from a pawn shop in North St. Louis City during downtown St. Louis protests over the death of George Floyd Jr. in Minneapolis.
She's basically like, I need you to grab all the cleaning supplies that you have and come down to the clock tower. There's a group of students scrubbing the clock tower. So I wake up my roommate or like knock on my roommate's door and I like grab my stuff. And I was like, let's go. we just grabbed cleaning supplies. We grabbed just everything we could and took it down to the clock tower. And I get to the clock tower and there's a small group of students literally scrubbing down the Sharpie with sponges, with rags, with loofahs. There's like dish soap out there. There's bleach out there. There's any and every cleaning supply that we had was out there. And we were scrubbing down the clock tower. And that's when people started spreading the message along with like everybody that was around us, like saw what we were doing and stopped and helped. And there were so many students that just literally halted their day and came up to us and asked us, what can we do? And so we had a line of people bringing water. We had people who went to literally multiple stores, three different Targets, to find chalk and came back with like buckets of chalk and like we're chalking over the parts that we couldn't clean. And people started making posters and started hanging up posters. We just extended the clock tower. We like all the chalk that Ashley had previously put, we just extended it.
Eric Hamilton, an undergraduate student studying social science education and a resident advisor, was among the students who responded to the call to clean the clock tower.
One of my residents had arrived at the clock tower and was one of the initial people on the scene when this happened. And she alerted me and she called me hysterically and telling me, you know, what's going on.
Eric explains that there was a group of about 20 students and a few faculty comforting each other and attempting to clean the clock tower, but not everyone who passed by was supportive.
You know, while there were people who were with us, there were also people who were laughing and thought the situation was funny. And there were students who just kind of walked by and didn't care too much the pain that we were going through, the pain to see something like this happen on something so symbolic that stands for a lot on our campus. The sticky notes that we set out to leave messages of those who've been killed by police officers and lives who have been killed, black lives that have been killed, they were used to leave messages including like, the court was right, Breonna Taylor was a criminal, or Breonna Taylor deserved to die in a sense, essentially. And those were also just kind of scattered throughout.
Eric texted a picture of one of those sticky notes to fellow students to spread the word to those who hadn't made it to the clock tower that day. Then droves of students started arriving at the clock tower, resulting in an impromptu teach-in.
We started talking about SLU's history with slavery and SLU's history of social injustice and discrimination and SLU's complicity in racism, in racist practices. You know, whether it's the gentrification of the Midtown neighborhood or the way that we've institutionalized this notion of anti-racism and made it a corporate capitalist model.
St. Louis University is the first university to be founded west of the Mississippi River and the second oldest Catholic Jesuit university in the U.S. And like most universities and institutions founded in the U.S. before the Civil War, it was financed and built by the labor of enslaved people. Learning about the full lives of the people who were enslaved by Jesuits in the Midwest and tracing the genealogies of their living descendants is the focus of the Slavery History, Memory, and Reconciliation Project, which was launched by the Jesuits of the USA Southern and Central Province and St. Louis University 4 years ago. The university has begun reaching out to the descendants to share what they've found, but the process of reconciliation is still unfolding. The Slavery History, Memory, and Reconciliation Project is just one example of the many changes to curriculum, policy, structure, and funding that St. Louis University has undertaken since Occupy SLU in 2014. But students like Eric, Vanessa, and Ashley believe that the institution still has work to do to improve campus culture and ensure that Black and Brown students are fully valued. So up next, we'll hear how they got the attention of faculty, staff, and administrators and created new demands for racial equity that continue the legacy of the original Clock Tower Accords.
Hey everyone, it's Jalian. After the teach-in, Ashley and the rest of the students at the Clock Tower began writing a list of demands for St. Louis University.
What action steps can we do to hold school accountable for what just happened, and not just what happened, but what has been happening and what will continue to happen as long as white supremacy is functioning as the basis of this country? That's what will continue to happen.
With around 30 students, they drafted some initial demands before deciding their next course of action.
And then from there, I'm like, okay, so what y'all want to do now? Because if y'all want to sit here and chant, we can sit here and chant. If y'all want to go protest, we can go protest. Like, whatever y'all want to do, that's what I'm down to do, because I'm not trying to go home right now. Because I'm still mad. I'm still angry. I'm still infuriated. And I'm not about to go home and just sit there and be mad.
The students decided to take their frustrations to the streets.
We went through a series of protest chants that not only reminded the folks who are around us in the campus community of Breonna Taylor's life and that she mattered, but that Black lives matter, and as well as messages about, you know, no justice, no peace, no racist police. And we just echoed that over and over again. And as we were going down, you know, we had community members just join, you know, Sioux community members just joining us.
As they marched through campus and neighboring streets, they were joined by even more students, as well as faculty, staff, and a few Jesuit scholastics.
We were chanting as loud as we could, and we were looking at everybody, and we were telling them, like, get up and come out here. This is important.
They briefly blocked off Grand Avenue, a major street that runs through the St. Louis University campus, before returning to the clock tower where more students joined them.
We were like, you know what? We're going to go to DeBerg Hall. DeBerg Hall is the administrative building, which is named after Bishop DeBerg, who in fact also played a hand in Sioux having slaves. And we were like, you know, we need to rename these buildings, DeBerg Hall and Verhagen Hall, which were the halls named after Jesuits who played a hand in managing and owning slaves at Sioux. And we were like, you know, we're going to go into DeBerg Hall because that is the quote-unquote power center, the powerhouse of Sioux, where the highest-ranking administrators and folks are headquartered.
The number of students who joined them continued to grow, and they decided to block Grand Avenue for a second time.
We decided we were going to shut down Grand if that was what we needed to get attention from administration, if that is what we needed to get our point across, and we're going to shut down Grand. And so we walked over to Grand, and I sat down just in the middle of the road, and everybody followed suit, just sitting down. And we worked with the Metro to make sure we were letting buses through for sure. Buses were the only vehicles we were letting through because the people that are going to be impacted with us blocking buses were going to be minorities.
People brought them masks, hand sanitizer, cases of water, and even a megaphone.
We even have, you know, just passerby community members whose cars were kind of stuck by our occupation, who even joined the mic and are sharing their inspirational messages to us and sharing their wisdom and knowledge with us.
As the students engaged in community conversation and story sharing, Ashley continued taking notes, adding to the initial list of demands.
It was hard, you know, listening to people's pains and stuff like that. But it's also like, you know, we feel you, and you better talk your stuff. Like, you better be out there, you know, getting it off your chest the way you're getting it off your chest.
Ashley ended up with around 6 pages of notes that she later turned into a list of 11 demands with the help of Dr. Carla Scott, professor of communication and the director of the African American Studies program at St. Louis University. The demands ranged from requiring a first-year seminar course on the relationship between St. Louis University and enslaved and indigenous people, to expediting the transition of the African American Studies program to a more fully funded department, to disarming the school's Department of Public Safety. The public dialogue caught the attention of high-level administrators, such as St. Louis University President Dr. Fred Postello and the university's Vice President for Diversity and Community Engagement, Dr. Jonathan Smith, who happens to be on the board for St. Louis Public Radio.
We had a couple of them talk because we had questions for them. We had direct questions, and we asked them, like, are we going to see another email? Are we going to see action?
Ashley says that Dr. Postello suggested a meeting between student leaders, himself, and Dr. Smith. And eventually, the students ended their occupation of Grand Avenue to rest before a vigil for Breonna Taylor back at the clock tower.
It was hot and everyone needed to get home and like hydrate, get out of the sun, take care of themselves. We said, go home, take care of yourselves. And we'll see you back again at 9 at the clock tower.
Those who attended the vigil said it drew hundreds of students, resulting in the largest gathering of students at the clock tower since Occupy SLU in 2014.
We lit up candles that were donated to us from a student group on campus and had people turn on the flashlights on their phones. And, you know, we all just, you know, had a moment of silence. And that was this huge moment of unity that I've never seen in my time here at SLU, but also have not seen in quite some time. And I was like, we had students across the gender spectrum and students of different orientations, students of different racial and ethnic backgrounds, faith backgrounds, just sitting here, also different positions within our community, joining together saying, you know, unapologetically that all Black lives matter, that all Brown lives matter, that those living at the margins, they matter, and that we need to take action. You know, yes, this is symbolic of our values here, but we're dedicating ourselves to take action beyond today.
The students continued having open mic community conversations, but when the vigil was over, some stayed behind.
There were students that actually stayed overnight at the clock tower. Saturday into Sunday, there were students that stayed overnight to watch the clock tower, which was so heartbreaking because it's not their job and it shouldn't be their job. And they shouldn't feel that if they left the clock tower alone on our campus, that something was going to happen again. And so students stayed out all night. They were out there playing Frisbee with each other, doing exercise, just keeping each other awake. And students went out, and other students that weren't staying up all night, but wanted to help, they went out and bought them food, they bought them coffee, they bought them energy drinks, and like, again, just like the support poured out from everywhere.
That weekend, students kept watch over the clock tower and the messages they chalked about racism and the need for change until maintenance staff cleaned the clock tower on Monday afternoon.
They had to use different acids and different cleaning supplies to get the Sharpie off, which was, in my opinion, just so extreme that like just somebody needs to be held accountable for that, just the cost, the expenses of the cleaning.
And once the clock tower was clean, students rechalked their messages.
Ashley's message was rechalked exactly how it was put up to begin with, but if you look around the clock tower on the floor everywhere, there's drawings, there's writing in different languages of support. And that continued every single day. There were students out there making sure the clock tower is okay and just watching everything, putting up more posters, rechalking, making sure the lettering stays bold and everything. So it's been an enormous amount of support just from everybody in the SLU community that feels the same way. And so this is just has been an amazing thing to watch so many students come together and just pour their support into one another.
Recent actions at the clock tower have been important for students like Vanessa, Eric, and Ashley to remind their peers about the legacy of St. Louis University student activism.
We've been saying that the clock tower accords are like the Constitution and that our demands and what we did, what was done this weekend is more like amendments or friendly reminders almost, because as much as like we want to push the clock tower accords and what happened, like as the years pass, less and less students are going to know about it and are going to keep our administration accountable.
It was an exhausting situation that resulted in what we call the Clock Tower Accords. It took a week of occupation and students in the middle of midterms, missing classes, and students facing just terrible racial slurs being thrown at them and violent threats and community members and parents calling the school and saying, just terrible racist, bigoted things to largely Black operators of the phone. We had many Black senior female administrators at that time for, you know, the student-facing part of the university who were facing this and having just these slurs thrown at them.
And in the spirit of Occupy SLU, they've been reminding their peers that the St. Louis University community extends beyond their campus to people like Von Derrick Myers Jr., who we mentioned at the top of the show.
when we rechalked the clap tower, I told them that his name needs to be put front and center because this university likes to pretend that we're not affected or that it's not our community or that it's not us being affected, but our own community members are being killed and are being affected.
The St. Louis University webpage for the Clock Tower Accords acknowledges that Von Derrett's father, Von Derrett Myers Sr., has been a member of the SLU community for years, referring to his years-long employment at the university. But students like Vanessa, Eric, and Ashley believe that further work needs to be done to hold the university accountable for addressing racism and making the campus a safer place for Black and Brown students to learn and grow.
I know I walk on a campus with white supremacists. I know I walk on a campus with people who hate me for simply existing. And I personally don't know how to imagine this campus without that. And that's incredibly heartbreaking and saddening because obviously I came to SLU for a reason and I want to love SLU and I want to be SLU's daughter, as we say, but how am I gonna do that on a campus where I can't even exist because of the color of my skin, the amount of hatred there is.
I'm studying education and it's very much so from this white-centered lens, even in the way that we talk about race. Oh, race is a difficult thing to talk about. But someone who deals with racism and, you know, lives within systemic pressures, factors of racism, it affects all of us here in this group right now differently in many ways, but we feel the pain.
What it takes for this institution to create a safe space, it has to be from the institution. It can't just be from us seeking little things throughout ourselves. The institution has to support that. And we're aware that the institution doesn't just exist as the institution, it's functioning within deeper systems. So we're not just saying that it's going to be easy, but it doesn't have to be in a climate where folks think that they can write on a tower with a permanent marker and have no repercussions.
Multiple students have filed complaints with St. Louis University's Office of Institutional Equity and Diversity about how a person or people defaced Ashley's chalked messages using permanent markers. In response, the university has initiated its bias-related incident protocol, including an initial review and full investigation of the complaints, in partnership with the university's Department of Public Safety. Dr. Pastello and other senior leaders have met with some of the students who drafted the demands on how to improve equity on campus, especially for Black students, faculty, and staff. But efforts to change culture and policies don't happen overnight. And racism persists at predominantly white institutions across the country, with Black and Brown students fighting to be heard as they resist white supremacy at their schools. Meanwhile, the student organizers at St. Louis University are motivated by the support they've received from Black and Brown students and faculty who've made space for their frustrations and pain while encouraging them to press on.
My close friends, the community that was built at, a week ago, we've been supporting each other, and it's been the faculty. It's just been that constant just pour of love and support from those around me, and it is a bit sad to say, but majority of that is coming from students of color and faculty of color that are just supporting each other and holding each other. It's the people that I've chosen to surround myself with.
This episode is produced by me, Jalian Yang, and my co-producer, Lauren Brown. To read the full list of demands from St. Louis University students, read SLU Students Demand Racial and Economic Equity for Students, Faculty, and Staff by our colleague, Andrea Henderson, which is published at stlpublicradio.org. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here. Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.